Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Ayin Chet Amud Bet, the last line. Amar David. We had the last pasuk left off where they had 3 years of famine. They were trying to figure out what the problem was. Finally, they go to the Urim Bitumim and they get the word that the problem is what had happened with Shaul HaMelech. Two things. One was Shalom Nispeit Kahil Chata, that he didn't have a proper eulogy. And number two is that he had killed out the Givonim or done something to affront the Givonim. So the Gemara discussed the fact that it seemed to be one positive for Shaul and one negative for Shaul. The Gemara says, Eino Chanami. That's what the pasuk says. When the Hashem comes to judge an individual, they bring the whole slate in front of them. And so here there was one thing that was in Shaul's favor that they had not been maspid him, but there was also something negative, which is the problem, Hemita de Givonim, that he killed the Givonim. Gemara discussed what that means, Hemita de Givonim, because we don't find that anywhere that he killed the Givonim. So one possibility was the Gemara's suggestion here that he killed out Nov Ira Kohanim, and the Gibonim were the suppliers to Nov Ira Kohanim, and therefore they lost their parnasa. He destroyed their parnasa. Or the possibility that there were some Gibonim inside of Nov Ira Kohanim, since they were servicing Nov Ira Kohanim, and he killed them along with the Kohanim of Nov Ira Kohanim. So now David has to rectify the situation. So Amar David. Shaul, nafkaluhu treisar yarcheshata, velo darkei lemisbedei. As far as Shaul is concerned, and the eulogy for Shaul, more than 12 months have elapsed, and therefore it's just not appropriate to give a eulogy at this point in time. It's way beyond the time where it would be considered to be a proper eulogy for Shaul, so that we're going to pass on. Now, Rashi points out that this is way after 12 months. We're not talking about 12 months. We're talking about years later, because this is, at least in the order of the Navi, chronologically, it would put it towards the end of David's life, not towards the beginning of David's life. And therefore, it's tens of years, right? Even scores of years before, after the time that Shaul had passed away. Right, so that's a good question. Why is it only the punishment all happened here? It seems to be because of both of the issues. Why both issues? Both issues took place much, much earlier. Why is it only now that the famine comes into effect now? Which would indicate, again, the Gemara's not looking at this, would indicate that it might have happened much earlier in David's rule. You have to know that sometimes the Navi is not necessarily in order. The order is set up because of the nature of what the Navi wants to convey. So over there, it's very possible that this famine happened much earlier in David's lifetime or in his reign. And that would make a lot of sense from both perspectives. I mean, both problems of the Esbed of Shaul as well as Shaul killing the Givonim, that it happens much earlier in his reign, that would make more sense. Right, exactly. I mean, it's only mentioned in Navid later, but it would make sense that it was earlier. But Rashi, just saying, based on where it's placed in Shmuel Bet, says that it was way after. I mean, years after. It says, like, 30 years later. And therefore, it wasn't kavod to do the hesped at that point in time. So, nitinim, nikrinu v'nefasinu. So, the nitinim, or the givonim, as they're known, let us call them over and figure out what we can do to placate them, to appease them for what went wrong. So here they quote the psukim from Shmuel Bet, Vayikra Melech leGivonim, Vayomer lehem, Ma'aseh lechem, V'ma'achaper, Barchu et Nachlat Hashem. What can we do that would make you guys happy so that you will look favorably upon us and we won't be punished for this? Vayimru lo haGivonim, En lanu kesef zahav im Shaul v'im Beito, V'en lanu ish v'chule. We're not looking for money, we're not looking for anything else, but yutan lanu, Shiva anashim mibanav, give us 7 of his descendants, va'olka num la'Hashem, and we will hang them before Hashem. So, mifayes velo paisinu, he tried to placate them and say that this is not the way that we want to handle this situation, velo paisinu, and they were unwilling to accept anything besides the 7 descendants of Shaul as revenge, in a sense, for what had happened with Nov Ira Kohanim. If you say that there were 7 Givonim killed at the time that he wiped out Nov Ira Kohanim, that would make sense about what the number 7 is here. Otherwise, they're using 7 as a number that is a number of significance, because it's not clear why they would want 7 versus any other number. So Amar, Shlosha Simanim Yesh B'Umazu. David HaMelech says about us, the Jews, we are 3 character traits that are known to make someone Jewish, which is Rachmanim, Baishanim, Gumlei Chasadim. Rachmanim, they are merciful. Dichtiv, v'natan lecha rachamim, v'richamcha v'irbecho. You have a pasuk that says Hashem will give you rachamim and will be merciful to you. It's actually said in the context of ir ha-nidachat, that those people, after you wipe out the ir ha-nidachat, Hashem promises you that He will grant you rachamim. It's an interesting formulation in the pasuk, but in Sichud Musar, Rav Shmuel Levitz says this, it's a beautiful vort, which is that Hashem promises those people who have to wipe out the ir ha-nidachat, which is an act of achzariyut. It's an act of course, something that involves suppressing someone's natural tendencies or human side and killing out an entire city. I mean, it's not just the men, it's the entire city, you know, man, woman, and child. And therefore, they're going to be left, or it's going to impact them, and we're afraid that these people are going to lose their tzad rachamim because of the nature of what they have to do. So Hashem does not just promise them rachamim. He says, I will have rachamim in you. That's not what Hashem says. It says here that Hashem says, v'natan lecha rachamim. I will make you merciful, and therefore I can be merciful to you. What Rav Chaim Shulevitz points out is that Hashem always acts with us the way that we act with others. Hashem mirrors our behavior in our midot. And so if we are rachmanim, Hashem is also merachem aleinu. If we are mavir al midotav, then Hashem is mavir al midotav, in a sense. Obviously, He never can be really mavir al midotav, because we are held accountable for what we do. But the way that we act towards others, Hashem reflects that in His nature, His behavior towards us. So what Hashem promises over here to those people that wipe out the city of Ir ha-Nidachat is, I will give you rachamim. Meaning that I will give you the capability to act with rachamim, so that I can act towards you with rachamim. That's the promise, or the nature of this dual promise over here, not simply that I will be merciful towards you. No, that you will be merciful, and therefore I can be merciful upon you. V'natan lecha rachamim, v'richamcha. That's a beautiful idea in the promise that He makes those people that have to wipe out the ir ha-nidachat. Baishanim, they have a certain amount of busha, embarrassment. Dichtiv, bavur tiyeh yirato al pnechem, in order that Hashem's fear should be on their face. And they know that there's someone greater than them. They have a higher authority that they have to answer to, and therefore they can't just act without any reservations. They can't act without a certain amount of encumbrance, knowing that Hashem's watching everything they do. So they're baishanim. They have a certain amount of busha. Gomlei chasadim. They are people of generous heart. Dichtiv, l'man ashri tzavid benavet beito acharav. Lasot, stakol mishpat. This is the pasuk said by Avram Avinu when Hashem says, I have to tell him about what's going to happen with Sodom Ve'amora, because the nature of Avram is that he's going to teach his children. Lasot, stakol mishpat. It's one of the hardest pasukim in the Torah to understand. The Rishonim are arguing about it because of the formulation of the pasuk of Laman and Laman, which makes it very difficult to understand what's the cause and the effect in the pasuk. But the basic, without getting into the details of the pasuk, it says there, lasot stakol mishpat, that is the nature of what Abraham passed to us or conveyed to us, is stakol mishpat. So kol sheyesh bo shlosha simanim alalu, anyone who has these three character traits, ro'i lidabek b'umazu, they are worthy of being a part of Kalal Yisrael. Both mean from the side of recognizing that they're Jewish, but number two is from someone who wants to be a convert and join the Jewish people. These are the midot that you would expect to see in someone who is going to convert, because this is the nature of a Jew. So David sees the way they're acting and says, clearly there's a problem here, because they're unwilling to forego the revenge of taking the seven descendants of Shaul, which is already indicative of the fact that they are not rachmanim in any way, maybe even not baishanim, but definitely not rachmanim for here. So then, v'yikach ha-melech et shnei b'nei Ritzpah bataya asher yodah l'Shaul, takes the two children of Ritzpat Baya, Asher Yodala Shaul, that were born to Shaul. So now, Ritzpat Bataya appears a number of times. It seems that she was a pilegesh to Shaul. Earlier on in Shmuel Bet, when Ishbosheth takes over after the death of Shaul, Avner Benir is his general of his army, and then Avner Benir ends up taking Ritzpat Bataya, the pilegesh of Shaul, or there's something goes on over there, and Ishbosheth questions Avner Benir about it, and Avner Benir pushes back on him and says, basically, listen, you're nothing without me. I don't think you want to bring this up. But that's a Ritzpah Bataya, who is this Pilegesh, that has two children. Et Armoniv et Mephibosheth. Armoniv and Mephibosheth are the children of Ritzpah Bataya. As Tosafot points out over here, Oto Mephibosheth, Ben Shaul. That Mephibosheth was the son of Shaul, not the son of Yonatan. As Rabbeinu Tam points out, the Gemara in Brachot tells us that Mephibosheth was Mephibosheth ben Shaul, and his real name was Ishbal, one of the sons of Shaul. And he was the Rebbe of David HaMelech, and it was called Mephibosheth because he used to be Mevayesh Pnei David Balacha, that he used to embarrass David in Halacha. I mean, that the knowledge that he had or the ability that he had far surpassed those of David, and he was David's Rebbe. Tosfot then says, then why did he ask for Rachamim on his Rebbe? Tosfot says, maybe he did ask, and he wasn't answered. Then, Bat Chameshit b'nei Michal bat Shaul, asher yoda l'Adriel ben Berzilai amchulati. Then the five children of Michal bat Shaul that were born to Adriel ben Berzilai amchulati. There's somewhat of a difficulty over here. It's one of the more difficult psukim in the Navi. Because, first of all, we don't find Michal bat Shaul having children. Number two is, we don't find her being married to Adriel ben Barzilai. And number three is, at this point, she's probably supposedly married to David HaMelech, not to someone else. So the Mefarshim have to deal with this inconsistency or problem in the Pasuk. Many of them say that they really are the children of her sister Merav, Michal's older sister, the daughter of Shaul Merav. These are her children. And whether she passed away, whatever happened, and Michal's taking care of them. So she's their surrogate mother or their stepmother. And that's why they're brought under her name, but they're not necessarily her children. But just know, it's a very difficult pasuk that Michal has five children where we never find anything like that. Okay, Maishnahani, why did he pick these seven individuals? He just listed out here. Maishnahani, how did he know that these seven? Amravuna evirum lifne Aron. They brought him in front of the Aron. Kosh Aron Koto. Anybody who the Aron picks up, you know, I mean, says that this person is what, Roy Mita. Kosh Ein Aron Koto Lachaim. Anybody that the Aron didn't pick up goes Lachaim. Meitiv Rav Chana Bar Ketina. Ve'achmola Melech Al Mephibosheth Ben Yehonatan Ben Shaul. So the king has mercy on Mephibosheth, the son of Yonatan. Shelo Yiviro. So he didn't allow him to go in front of the Aron. Mephibosheth, son of Yonatan ben Shaul, he's a son who was injured when he was very young. When the Plishtim are attacking, they have to leave, run away from the palace. And his nursemaid, or whoever was taking care of him when he was very young, was carrying him in the rush to leave. She falls, and he breaks his leg in that fall, and he remains in a difficult position, almost lame for the rest of his life. He's unable to walk, which basically counts him out from being king because of that. David HaMelech has a soft spot for him because he had that strong relationship with his father, Yonatan, although he gets into a difficult altercation in the merit of Shalom with Mephibosheth's servant, who pretends to go and help David and says Mephibosheth is going to rebel against him. In the end, David splits the land between Mephibosheth and his servant, which leads to the splitting of the Melucha, according to the Midrash. But Mephibosheth is someone who is special in David's eyes because he's the son of Yonatan. Wait, so there's some sort of favoritism over here? Why is David allowed to pick who goes in front of the Aron and doesn't go? The whole idea is they go in front of the Aron and Hashem picks who's going to be one of the seven. How does David protect Mephibosheth? Elashi viro bikalto. No, he did allow him to go through those seven. And then the Aron picks him up. And then he asks for Rachamim in order that the Aron would spit him out, meaning that it would let him release him. How can he be a favoritism? If the Aron picks him, how does he have a right to interfere here and say no? Now he asks for mercy that the Aron would not accept him. Meaning, before the fact, he davens to Hashem, saying that, please don't allow Mephibosheth to be amongst those that are picked. Vativ, lo yumtu avot al banim. Alright, so the Gemara leaves it there and says, okay, maybe that's not masol panim because already Hashem made the decision. Question is, David is trying to intercede through his tefillah to have Hashem not take Mephibosheth. So now the Gemara asks a separate question, which is, why are these children responsible for the sins of their fathers? I mean, this is a problem of Shaul. These are descendants of Shaul. Why are they being held accountable for Shaul's mistakes? So Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Avraham Rabbi Yochanan, it's an amazing statement of the Gemara over here. Mutav shete'aker otachat min haTorah, v'yitechalel shem shemayim b'faresia. That it's worth giving up a din in the Torah, meaning, Elohim tu avot albanim, that children will not die for the sins of their fathers, that it's worth having that be overridden, in order that there will not be a Chilul Hashem over here, a Chilul Hashem in public. Because the Jews had accepted the Givonim, had given them a brit, a covenant, that they would take care of them. And now either they're leaving them starving, or they're mistreating them, or they were killed. And people are going to look at the way that the Jews treated their allies or those that had joined them, and it would be a huge Chilul Hashem in the way that they're treating the Givonim. So that's what the Gemara says here. It's better to override that din of children being responsible for their father's sins in order that there is no Chilul Hashem. You see how important this aspect of Chilul Hashem, Kiddush Hashem is, that we have to act in a manner that will not cast aspersions on our behavior and the way that we conduct ourselves with other people or interact with other nations. Vatikach ritzpa bataya tasak vetateyu la elatzur mitchilat katsir ad nitach hamayim alehem min hashamayim v'lo natna of hashamayim lanuach alehem yomam v'chayat hasadeh alayla. This woman who is a eshet chayo, I mean, her children and relatives are all being hung, which is what ends up happening here. The Givonim hang them up, and they refuse to take them down. So they're basically hanging there for months on end. It says here that it's from the time of Tchilat HaKatzir, which is the beginning of the harvest, the springtime or late springtime, until Nitach HaMayim is until the rainy season, is till winter, till Cheshvan. That means they're out there for the hottest part of the year, the summer. And the corpses of the bodies are just the gallows or the trees, wherever they put them up. And they refuse to take them down, the Givonim. So another aspect of their complete lack of rachamim, or ability to deal with the people in a proper manner, in a respectful manner. But this woman, this Ritzpa Bataya, who's taking care of her children and her relatives, she takes a sack and she chases away the birds and the wild animals. She basically protects the corpses all through this period. Vativ, the Gemara says again, lo talin nivlatol eitz. There's an Isur min haTorah to leave a body overnight on a tree. Forget about over months on a tree. How was this action condoned? Remember, we're under Jewish rule now. We're under David HaMelech. There's no reason why they shouldn't be following the Torah law. So how come here we're abrogating Torah law to placate the Givonim? Again, I'm Rabbi Yochanan Mishim Rabbi Shimon Ben Yehud Tzadak. So this is the other side of that picture, which is better to give up a law in the Torah in order to have a Kiddush Hashem in public. Because here, the Kiddush Hashem is anybody who passes by, sees these bodies, asks what the story is, and says, because they mistreated these people that joined the Jewish people, that's why they were punished. What's the story with these people? They're princes. Umasu pashtu yadayim begerim girurim. They mistreated these problematic gerim that were there. Amru en lecha uma shiruyali dabek bakazu. There's no better nation than the Jews. If this is the way they treat their gerim, then alchazkam v'kama, that the way that they treat each other and how it should be. Ma b'nei b'nachim kach. And if this is the way they treat their princes who violate the proper conduct, b'nei hedyot alchazkam v'kama, then certainly just regular lay people, they would act in this way. Uma gerim grurim, right? Even these gerim that are problematic, this is the way they treat them. Yisrael achad kama v'kama. Certainly, Klal Yisrael as a whole, look, this must be the midot that they treat each other with. Here, they're taking care of these outsiders, these gerim. So certainly, they treat each other. Miyat no tosfu al Yisrael me'av v'chavushim elef. 150,000 gerim join Klal Yisrael at this time period because of the Kiddush Hashem that is created. So you see here that there was a Chilul Hashem, and then they have to rectify it through a Kiddush Hashem, which is the way that the Gemara and Yoma at the end, 8th Parak, talks about one who has violated or done a Chilul Hashem. The way to rectify it is to do a Kiddush Hashem. So that's exactly what happens over here. There's a Chilul Hashem in the way that the Givonim are treated, and the rectification of that is through a Kiddush Hashem. And even though, and again, through the ability to provide the Kiddush Hashem, there's a violation of certain tenets of the Torah, because, obviously here it's done with the Urim V'Tumim, it's done with the Navi, but there's clearly a violation, abrogation of certain minor laws of the Torah, or principles of the Torah, in order to create this Kiddush Hashem that will rectify the Chilul Hashem that was created. So how do we know that? Shenemar, Vayilu Shlomo, 70,000 Nosei Sabal, 80,000 Chutzvev Bahar. He has 70,000 schleppers and 80,000 couriers that he has added to him. So it says, "V'dilma Yisrael havu." Maybe they were Jews. Who says that these were non-Jews that joined Klal Yisrael? So that Shlomo never made any of the Jews into slaves. Maybe they were just hired hands. I mean that these were people that he, day laborers or people that he hired to work for him. Who says he's not paying them? It says, he claims all those people. Found 150,000. V'yasmehem 70,000 sabal u'shmanim 70,000 chotzei bahar. So it says here that he found them, after he counted, he found these individuals who were outsiders living in Eretz Yisrael, and he made those outsiders into his workers, meaning into the people who are serving the king. So these were outsiders living in Eretz Yisrael. And so what does he do with them? He makes them into the workers or his laborers. And obviously the pasuk here in Divrei Yamim is parallel with the pasuk in Melachim Aleph. And so the connection between them is that these individuals, these 150,000 individuals, were actually gerim, not Jews that were put to work and not hired help that were put to work. So here you have this idea of these converts, even though it's interesting that the Gemara in other places says that we did not accept converts in the time of David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech because they were lo ba'u el l'shulchan melachim. They only came to enjoy the good life because the Jews were ascendant at that time, so we don't accept them as gerim. So it's interesting here, you have 150,000 that are gerim, and how you reconcile that with the Gemara's principle might be because here they became gerim because of the Kiddush Hashem. If they could clearly associate it with that, maybe that separated it from the problem of Shulchan Melachim. Others suggest that that restriction against accepting gerim was if they went to a proper Beit Din. But here they didn't go to a proper Beit Din who would have not accepted them. They went to a lower level Beit Din who did accept them, and therefore that's how we ended up with these gerim. But just note that it's against some of the other things we've seen in the Gemara about not accepting gerim during the time of David and Shlomo. Alright, now, where it says, based on this, the Gemara's whole story here, this is why David HaMelech is the one who's gozer on the Nitinim, or on the Givonim, that they may not marry into Klal Yisrael. Min HaTorah, they are fine once they've converted, assuming that there's no problem of the Shiva Amamim, depending if you hold like Rava or don't hold like Rava, as to whether the Lotit Chatein Bam applies before they convert or even after they convert. I'm assuming Machloket Rishonim as well, whether we paskin that way with Rava or not. But leaving that part aside, David HaMelech gozer on top of that, that even if they do convert, they cannot marry amongst Klal Yisrael because of this incident where they show character traits that are not becoming of a Jew. And therefore he makes a clear delineation between the Givonim or Nitinim and Bnei Yisrael. So where it says, Nitinim, David gazar lehem? Is it really true that David was gozer on the Nitinim? Moshe gazar lehem. They're already around from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Dichtiv, michutev etzecha, ad shuei vehemecha. When Moshe is speaking to the Am, he says, from your woodcutters until your water drawers. Now, there's no indication there that he's speaking about Nitinim. Seems to be that he's talking to Klal Yisrael. And it's just giving you, no matter who you are, right, this applies to you. But the way that the Gemara is reading it is that Chotev Eitzecha and Shoev Memecha is something that is particularly associated with the Nitinim, which we see in the time of Yoshua, because Yoshua makes the Givonim, gives them these jobs. So the implications or the way the Gemara is extrapolating from that is that the same thing happened in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, that either they came and converted or they did some sort of trickery as well. But already, this already happened in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, and it comes again in the time of Yoshua. But based on that, Moshe Rabbeinu already assigned them as being Chotev Etzim and Shoev Mayim. So now Gemara says, Moshe Gazar Lahaudara. Moshe was only Gozer for that generation. David Gazar Lekulei Dara. David was Gozer forever, meaning that he made it a permanent status. Vekate Yoshua Gazar Alayu. Wait, isn't it Yoshua who was Gozer on them? I mean, the whole incident takes place in the time of Yoshua. That he made them into workers for Bnei Yisrael and for the Mizbeach. I mean, he designates the Givonim who tricked them into bringing an alliance with Klal Yisrael, even though they're one of the Shiva Amamim. They trick Bnei Yisrael because they dress up as if they came from afar, and Yoshua keeps his word because he doesn't want it to be a Chilul Hashem, and therefore they keep their alliance with them and they protect them. from the kings that attacked them. Once it's known that the Givonim made an alliance with Klal Yisrael, the Melachim get together. The Malchei Canaan get together and attack the Givonim intentionally because they made an alliance with the Jews. And then Yeshua has to travel overnight to come and protect the Givonim and to live up to the alliance that he made with them. But Yeshua already makes them into Chotvei Etzim and Shovei Maim. This is why the Gemara extrapolates back to Moshe also, that the same terminology that's used over there indicates that the Netinim were also dealt with by Moshe Rabbeinu. So Gemara says, Yeshua Gazmar Mezman Shebeit HaMikdash Kayam. David Gazar Mezman Shein Beit HaMikdash Kayam. So Moshe only did it for that generation. Yeshua made it permanent as long as there was a Beit HaMikdash, because he has the association with the Mizbeach. So he did, as long as the Mikdash and Mishkan's around, then they're assigned as Chotvei Etzim and Shovei Mayim to serve the Mizbeach and serve the Mikdash. David HaMelech makes it a permanent status, which is, even when the Mikdash is not around, then they still have this status and they're still precluded from joining Klal Yisrael, and they're still Chotvei Etzim and Shovei Mayim. B'mei Rabbi Bikshu Atir Nitinim. In the time of Rabbi, they wanted to unwind the whole thing with the Nitinim because it seemed no longer relevant. Again, no Mikdash, and we're way past the time where it seems that it's relevant anymore. Amar Lehem Rabbi Chelkeinu Natir. We can be Matir, our position of a Chelik Mizbeach Miyatir, who has the right to give up the portion of the Mizbeach. Meaning that it says in Yeshua, he gave him to the Eidah and to the Mizbeach. So the Eidah is they have to serve as Klal Yisrael. Mizbeach is that they have to serve as Hashem or work in the Mishkan and the Mikdash. So what Rabbi says is, look, we can forego our rights in the Netinim. That we can do, he says, Hefker Beit Din Hefker, or we can come to agreement that we forego our rights here. But as far as the Mizbeach is concerned, who says that we can unwind what was done before? You're going to need a Beit Din that is as great as the time of Yeshua to unwind that, or the time of David HaMelech to unwind it. We can't do that. Or, Uplige de Reb Chir Ba'avo. We have another version of this with Chir Ba'avo. Damar Reb Chir Ba'avo, Amar Reb Yochanan. Chelek Eidah Lo'olam Asur. The portion that belongs to the Eidah is permanent. Chelek Mizbeach, the Eidah Mizbeach, Zman Shebeit HaMikdash Kayam Asur. When the Mikdash is extant, then it's problematic. Ein Beit HaMikdash Kayam Shari. There's no Mikdash, then they're not any way encumbered to the Mizbeach. So the only thing that's left is the Eidah's rights here, and that you can't forego. That is Asur until you're matirit, until you convene a Beit Din, and then wind the whole Zerah. But it has to be a Beit Din that's greater in size and chokhmah than the one that put it in place originally, which we're going to have be hard-pressed to say we can do, because it was done in the time of Yeshua and done in the time of David HaMelech, so it's going to be hard to match that type of Beit Din in order to unwind it. But you see here, there's a machlok between Reb Chir Ba'avo and Rabbi as to which part of the Zerah or the Takana is binding to the point that we can't unwind it. According to Rabbi, it's the Mizbeach's portion that we can't unwind. According to Reb Chir Ba'avo, it's the Eidah's portion that we can't unwind. And that's what it says here, Pliga, that they argue about this. But according to both of them, because of that problem, we can't unwind the Takanar Gzeirah. Therefore, the Netinim remain problematic or unable to marry into Klal Yisrael. All right, next Mishnah. Amar Rabbi Yoshua, Shemati, Shasaris Choletz V'Chotzlim Leishto. That a saris, someone who is a eunuch, someone who is unable to reproduce, choletz, he does chalitza, and in addition to that, choltzim liishto, if he dies, the brothers do chalitza with his wife. But saris, lo choletz, lo choltzim liishto. But I have another misora, that with regards to a saris, lo choletz, lo choltzim liishto. Neither of these are true. He doesn't do chalitza, and we don't do chalitza to his wife. Vainly lefarish, and I can't explain it. I mean, I have a mesorah in both directions, and I don't know which belongs to which. So I'm Rabbi Akiva, and he lefarish. Rabbi Akiva says, no problem, I'll take care of it for you. Sris adam choletz v'chotzim liishto, mipnei sha'ayta lo shata kosher. That when it comes to a sris adam, which means that through some sort of human intervention, he became impotent, which is that he's no longer able to reproduce, because of something that happened, whether he was hit, whether it's something that he punctured, or something that happened after a point in time, which means at some point he was able to reproduce. So when he got married to his wife, it was a good marriage or a proper marriage. And also now, when he comes to do chalitza, even though now he's a saris, originally he was at a point where he could have done chalitza, so therefore he's qualified in both sides of this. Swiss chama, someone who has congenital problems, he was never roi. He never was of a status where he could have married his wife, or that he would have been able to perform Yibum. So that's Rabbi Akiva's distinction. Rabbi Akiva's distinction is whether it's Tzvi Sadam or Tzvi Chama makes that difference here. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, lo. Just the opposite way around. Rabbi Lezer argues in Rabbi Akiva and says that the Saris Chama Choletz V'Cholzim Li'Ishto because if he is a Saris Chama, if he has a congenital problem, there's a chance that there is a medical solution to the problem. It can be fixed. Saris Adam Lo Choletz V'Lo Cholzim Li'Ishto V'Pnei She'en Lo Rufua. When it comes to something that was caused by some sort of human involvement, I mean that after he was around for a while, something happened that caused him the problem, either because he got smashed, he got hit, he got cut, whatever happened here, that's something that we can't rectify. So his belief is that something that's congenital has a cure to it, something that is caused during the lifetime of the individual doesn't have a cure to it, and therefore there'll be the difference. Since the one who has a possibility of a cure, that makes him not into a permanent seris, and that's why his marriage is good, or he does chalitza with the brother's wives, or they do chalitza with his wife. But the Sri Saddam, which makes him into a permanent status like this, because of that, you wouldn't have chalitza with either of them. Heid Rabbi Yeshua ben Betera ben Migusat, Sheya bi Yerushalayim. He testifies about this incident in Yerushalayim, this individual, ben Migusat, which was his name, Sri Saddam. He was someone who was a Saris Adam, had been caused later on in his life, he became impotent. V'imuat ishto, and they did perform Yibum with his wife, the Kayem Divrei Rabbi Akiva. This supports the position of Rabbi Akiva, that here we're talking about a Saris Adam, and there was Yibum performed with his wife, not just Chalitza, but Yibum performed with his wife, which indicates that they believed that a Saris Adam was permissible, like Rabbi Akiva suggests over here. A saris lo choletz v'lo miyabeim. A saris cannot perform chalitza or yibum. Over here, this saris that we're talking about, the latter half of the Mishnah, is the saris that's problematic. So according to Rabbi Kiva, it's referencing a saris chama. And according to Rabbi Eliezer, this is referencing the saris adam, whichever one of them, according to each party, is the problematic saris, then these are the dinim that apply to them. V'chein alonit lo choletz v'lo mityabemet. And so too, an Ilonit, a woman who's unable to reproduce, doesn't have chalitza or yibum associated with her. That's based on the pasuk, because of Asher Yakum Hashem Achiv. He has to have a child that is going to take over his brother's name. If you can't bear children or you can't produce children, then there's no sense of chalitza or yibum being here. They're already outside the parsha. That's what the Gemara learned before. If you remember, we had that drasha with regards to this issue. Asarit shechalatz livimto. Lo pasla. A saris that performs chalitza with his yivama, he doesn't have any impact on her. Since he cannot perform chalitza, or there's no reason for chalitza, when he performs chalitza, it has no effect on the woman. And the woman is not now considered to be a chalutza. Bala, on the other hand, if he has bia with her, pasla. Then he is poseler, mipnei she bilatznot. Because there it's a problem of bilatznot, because she is asura to him. She is his brother's wife. Shalom b'makom heter. There's no yibum for him over here. So for him, she still has a status of karet, esherach. So esherach has karet, and he has a biyad znut with her, he's posel her. V'chein ailonit, the same is true with a woman. Shechaltzu la'achim, if the brothers do chalitza with this woman who's an ailonit married to their brother, lo paslua, they don't make her pasul because the chalitza has no impact, has no effect at all, because there's no necessity for chalitza over here. Balua, paslua. On the other hand, if they have bia with her, then they make her into pasul. Minei shebdila tabilat znut. Again, she's eshet ach shelo b'makom mitzvah. She's an eshet ach where there's no need for yibum. That makes her into a chiyuv karet. You have bia with her, that creates a bia znut, and that's a problem. Makes her into a psula. Mechtei sheminyan leRabbi Akiva da'amar chayevei lavim kechayevei kreto damu. So we know that Rabbi Akiva believes that a chiyuv lav or an isur lav has the same din as a isur karet. And when it comes to chayvei kreitot, they don't perform chalitza and yibum, they're automatically dismissed. So well, we had the whole first perek, the first mishnah we dealt with this, when you have arayot that are married as an esher ach, that's an erva, then she goes free without any questions, there's no yibum and chalitza because the brother is unable to marry this woman because she's an erva. The sister, for instance, if Reuven and Shimon, Reuven marries Shimon's daughter, he marries his niece, If Reuben passes away without children, Shimon obviously cannot perform Yibum with his daughter, and therefore she is freed without Chalitza or Yibum. It's an automatic thing, because there's a Chiyuv Karet there. Rabbi Akiva says the same thing with Chiyuv Lavin, not just by Chiyuv Karet, also by Chiyuv Lavin. So if that's the case, what's going on in our Mishnah? In our Mishnah, we're talking about Lo Yavo Ptzua Dakah V'Kut Shavcha B'Kal Hashem. So a Saris has an Isur Lav associated with him. If he has an Isur Lav associated with him, why are we talking about Yibum and Chalitza over here? There should be an automatic dismissal over here. There should be no need for Chalitza or Yibum. It should be gone like an Erevah, like in the first Perek. Sam Rabbi Abi, Achub Mayaskinan. What's the case here? Kagon Shenasa Chiv Gioret. His brother married a convert. Rabbi Akiva suffered like Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Akiva also like Rabbi Yossi, Damar Kal Gerim Lo Yikre Kal, against Rabbi Yehuda. We just saw Rabbi Yehuda's opinion yesterday. Now we're seeing Rabbi Yossi's opinion where he says, Kal Gerim Lo Yikre Kal. The Kal of Gerim is not considered to be a Kal, therefore, he's not under the restriction of Lo Yavo Ptzua Daka V'Krut Shavcha B'Kal Hashem. They're not considered to be Kal Hashem, the Gerim. So his brother was a Saris. He had a problem, and he's not allowed to vote B'Kal Hashem. So what did he do? He married a Gioret, who's not under that restriction. So there is no Isra Lav here. Since there's no Isra Lav over here, then we're in a good position. So Gemara says, Iochi, if that's the case, Yuvuve Nami Yabein, then why are they only doing Chalitza here? Yechiel's question, why is the Mishnah only mentioned Chalitza if Yibum is an option? Because here, why, if this is the case that he's married to a Gioret and it was a perfectly good marriage, then if you say that a Saris, when his wife now, who is a Gioret, drops to the brothers, they have to deal with her, then they should be able to perform either Yibum or Chalitza, because there was nothing illegal about this marriage. It was a perfectly good marriage. Where it says, Eino Chanami. You're right. He could have performed Yibum. V'aydi damar Rabbi Yeshua Choleitz. Because Rabbi Yeshua says that there's Chalitza over here, Amar Iu Nami Choleitz. Rabbi Kiva also said Choleitz. So Rabbi Kiva says Chalitza here, not because that's the only option, but rather because it is one of the two options, which is Chalitza and Yibum. So why does he only focus on Chalitza? Because Damar Rabbi Yeshua Choleitz, Iwa Amai Nami Choleitz. Since Rabbi Yeshua, the introduction, who spoke about, I have a Mesorah, about a Saris that's Choleitz, and then I have a Bona, I have a Saris that's not Choleitz, Rabbi Kiva is just parroting this statement of Rabbi Yeshua. He's trying to explain the Stira that Rabbi Yeshua brings down. So in addressing the new Stira that Rabbi Yeshua brings down, he talks in the language of Rabbi Yeshua, which is Chalitza. But that doesn't mean it's only Chalitza. It means it could be Yibum as well. Deka Nami, you can make a diuk about this because of the story brought in the Mishnah. Diktani Hayiv Rabbi Yeshua ben Beterah ben Megusat, Shaya B'Yushalayim Srisadam, V'imuat Ishto, L'kayim Divrei Rabbi Akiva, Shma Mina. So in that case, where they told the story in Yerushalayim, where they said they had a woman who was a wife of a Srisadam, and yet what? They allowed the brothers to perform Yibum with his wife. And they said, that's Shitat Rabbi Akiva. Well, Shitat Rabbi Akiva, you just said before, was only Chalitza. Obviously not. Shitat Rabbi Akiva is either Chalitza or Yibum, and I can prove that to you from the story. And therefore, the reason that Rabbi Akiva spoke in terms of Chalitza is not because Chalitza is the only option, but just because that's what Rabbi Yeshua brought down. That was the Mesorah that Rabbi Yeshua brought down that Rabbi Akiva is trying to address. That's the Mesorah he remembered. He had this Mesorah that he remembered, that there's sometimes that Shri Saddam only does Chalitza, and sometimes that we do Chalitza with his wife. Why? That's a question, because a Sris is only a Isra Lav. And when it comes to an Isra Lav, we know what the din is. By Isra Erevav Karei, no Kedushin Tov Sin, the Erevav goes free without anything. By Isra Lav, where Kedushin are Tov Sin, you do Chalitza and not Yibum. So because, according to most people, besides Rabbi Akiva, then Isra Lav, Kedushin are Tov Sin, therefore if an Erevav that is really not an Erevav, but a problem of an Isra Lav, falls to Yibum, we do Chalitza, not Yibum. So that's why he's talking in terms of Chalitza, not Yibum. Rabbi Akiva, who believes that an Isra Lav is the same thing as an Isra Karet, for him, it's a different. It's an Erva that goes free without anything at all. So because of that, we have to rethink the Mishnah in Rabbi Akiva's terms. So for Rabbi Akiva, Isra Lav can be Yibum or Chalitza because of the nature of the way he set up the case. Whereas for Rabbi Yoshua, it's only Chalitza, not Yibum, because it's an Isra Lav. Isra Lav in, end up with a situation where you can only perform Chalitza, not Yibum. Remeti Rabo. Tzua Daka Krut Shofcha, Svisadam, Vazakein, O Chotzin, O Miyabim. So here you have a list of individuals, right from Tosefta, which is Ptua Daka, Kutchovcha, Sri Saddam, all these individuals, a Zakain, someone who is older. Now, Zakain in this list is not like the other members of the list, and as Rashi notes over here, Nakad Le Behadi Hanach, Mishum the Dami Luhu. He's similar to them, the Haitalo Shata Kosher, Behashta Pasak Mileda, that he at one point had the ability to reproduce, and now he's unable to reproduce. So he had his Shata Kosher, which is similar to the Sri Saddam, according to Rabbi Akiva. O Chotzin, O Miyabim. They either have to do Chalitza or Yibuch. Ketzad, Meituf, they died. Vilahem Nashim, Vilahem Achim. They have wives, and they have brothers. Vamdu Achim Vasu Ma'amar B'nishotayim. If they did Ma'amar with their wives. Vinatnu Get, or gave a Get, O Shechaltzu. Or they do Chalitza. Masha Asu, Asu. Whatever they've done is done, and that terminates the Ibum situation. Vim balu kanu. On the other hand, if they have bial with these women, then they are koneh them, they make them into the performance of Ibum. Meitu achin. On the other hand, if the brothers die, vim duhein. And these individuals that we have listed here, they go ahead, v'asu ma'amar minishotayim. They do ma'amar. Vinatnu get, or they gave a get. O chaltzu, or they did chalitza. Mashasu asu, whatever is done is done. Vim balu kanu. If they do biyah, then they are koneh. Basur lekaiman. But they can't continue to have the marriage stay intact. Mishum shenemar. Lo yavo ptsua daka v'kut shavcha v'kal Hashem. So that says that you can't join the kal Hashem. So the first biyah is a biyat mitzvah for Yibum. So since it's a biyat mitzvah for Yibum, it might override, but he has to give her a get in order to divorce her because he's not allowed to keep her. So Alma Begalaskinan. The first thing the Gemara concludes from here is that we're talking about somebody in the cow. Because the fact that the Tosefta mentions Lo Yavo Psua Dakav Kutchavcha Bekal Hashem shows you that we're talking about somebody that is belonging to the cow. Otherwise, if we're talking about a Gioret over here, then they should be able to stay married to her. The fact that we're not talking about a Gioret is the reason that there's a problem. So that's number one. And what is mentioned here, one of the items that's mentioned here is a Sri Saddam. That is Shitat Rabbi Akiva. So here you have Shitat Rabbi Akiva, and we're still talking about Kal Hashem. We're not talking about a Gioret. Elo Amar Rabba, what's the case here? Kagon Shenafla Lo, the case in our Mishnah. Kagon Shenafla Lo, Ulusof Nifza. So the case in our Mishnah is not a case, like we said before, where he was married to Gioret, his brother was married to Gioret, where there's no problem. Avlo Yavo Ptua Dakav, Kutshapcha Begal Hashem. So that's not the case in the Mishnah. The case in the Mishnah is rather a case, Shenafla Lo. He was not a Tzua Daka when the woman became a Yivama. But then he was Niftza before he consummated the Yibum with her. So then that's the problem over here, which is that at one point he was Ra'ui, because there was a Zika there, but that Zika now gets wiped out or they can't consummate because he's a Tzua Daka now. But he has the Zika that already existed. So how do you remove the Zika? He has to do Chalitza. So that's the necessity for Chalitza over here is because at one point he was ra'ui to have biyah with her. But now that he can't have biyah with her, he can't consummate. So he has to do Chalitza to remove the zika. He cannot perform Yibum. And now the mission is exact. It says Chalitza, not Yibum at all. So Amar Le Abayi v'leite Yisr Ptua v'nidche Aseh de Yibum. If he's a Ptua Daka, why are we even talking about the Aseh Yibum? Milo Tznan. Don't we have a Mishnah? Rabbi Gil Omer, Imiyana, Imiyana. Vimlav tamtina shetagdil v'teitzeh lezu mishum achotisha. Alma ati isra chotisha vidochi. When there's a problem of a chotisha, it pushes out the isra, the mitzvah of Yibum. So it's over here. If you have a mitzvah of lo yavo ptua daka b'kal Hashem, that should eliminate the need for chalitzar Yibum over here. Even though at one point they were ru'im. Remember, it's because it's the same case as Rabbi Gamliel. What's the case by Rabbi Gamliel? It's a case that we're getting closer to in the Masechta. We mentioned it a number of times before, which is that the two brothers married to two sisters. Reuven's married to Rachel, and Shimon is married to Leah. But Reuven married to Rachel. Rachel is a minor. She's a ktana. So she's only married to her midi Rabbanan, assuming that her father didn't give over a kiddushin here. He's only married to her midi Rabbanan. Her father had passed away. So either she was married once before, or her father passed away, and her mother and brother married her off. She's a ktana. Shimon now dies without any children. So now his Leah, there's available midoraita for Reuven to perform Yibum with her. The problem is that he's married to Rabbanan, to her sister. Tzachot ishto, but only midrabanan. So immiyana, if the ktana does miyun, which retroactively unwinds their marriage, then he can go ahead and deal with Shimon's wife, with a yivama. On the other hand, if she doesn't do miyun, what does Rabbi Gamliel say? You wait until she's tagdil, until she grows up, and then he's boel her. So that's the question here of what that means. We dealt with this before. Machloket in the Rishonim. Does that mean that he's not allowed to be with her until she becomes of age and therefore they consummate the marriage? Or does that mean that tamtina shetagdil, that we wait until she becomes of age and then the woman's automatically released by the fact that she is of age because now the marriage is now consummated at that point in time because of a chot ishto? But what you see here is that we're willing to wait, and then the erva comes into place. That means at the time that the death happened, the yevama came, he was connected to her, zika d'oraita. Then this woman grows up, and he has her as a wife. Now becomes a chot ishto, because she's now a woman of age, and the marriage now is consummated mid'oraita. It's a full-fledged marriage at this point, mid'oraita. So now it knocks off the problem of yibum because of erva. But you see now that you can knock that off later in time. So why don't we say the same thing here with Psua Daka? Originally, this woman fell to him, and she was muteret to him because he wasn't a Psua Daka. Then all of a sudden, he becomes a Psua Daka. Later on, well, that's a problem to marry him. That should remove the need for Yibum anymore. It should automatically dissolve, just like it does by the case of a Chot Ishto when she comes of age. So why don't we say the same thing over here? So that's the Abaye's question over here. Which is, over here we see, Mishum Achotisha, Alma Ati Yisra Achotisha. Yisra Achotisha comes on later, Vidochi, and removes the problem of Yivam. Hachanami, Neite Yisra Ptsua, Vinidchei. So the Yisra Ptsua Daka should come now and eliminate the problem of Yivam. Why do you need Chalitza at all? It should automatically dissolve. El Amar of Yosef, so now we have a third attempt at the answer here, which is we had, so Rabbi Ami was the first one who suggested there was a case of Gioret. Then we have Rabba's suggestion that he became a Psua Daka after she fell as a Yivama. Abaye challenges that, and now we have Rav Yosef giving a third possibility, which is, Ay Tano, Hach Tano Debei Rabbi Akiva Hi. The Tano of our Mishnah is this Tano in the sheet of Rabbi Akiva. Damar Michavi Lavim Desheer Avi Mamzer, Michavi Lavim Greda Lo Avi Mamzer. Solve the problem, which is, there's a Machloket within the sheet of Rabbi Akiva. Where does Rabbi Akiva say that Chayvei Lavin are like Chayvei Kretot? Where does Rabbi Akiva say that a chiyuv lav produces a mamzer? So we had this machloket early in the Masechta, as to whether that chiyuv lav applies to any chiyuv lav, or only chiyuv lav of she'er, of relatives. So chiyuv lav of she'er, of relatives, or improper marriages, those result in mamzerim. But a chiyuv lav, grade A, like Psua Daka and Krut Shavcha, which are not a problem of she'er, it's not a problem of relationship, it's a problem of period that you're not allowed to be involved in Kal Hashem. So over there, that doesn't produce a mamzer. Once you do that, then you don't have the problem anymore because now Rabbi Akiva doesn't have an erva in the Mishnah and you're not automatically released. That's what I said before, that if you have an Isur Lav only forces you to do Chalitza, not Yibum. It doesn't automatically release you because an Isur Lav doesn't have that level of Chiyuv Karet that automatically releases you. Right, so if you're talking about Isur Karet, the Erva releases and there's no Yibum or Chalitza at all. If you're an Isur Lav, then it's Chalitza without Yibum. But Rabbi Kiva holds that a Lav is just like Karet. That was our problem. What's the solution of Yosef said? This is according to that Shita, and Rabbi Kiva believes that not every Lav looks like Karet. There are certain Lavim that look like Karet. This is not one of them because it's not a Lav of She'er. So now the Gemara says, Ikre Kan Lakim Lachib Shem V'lahala Bar Hachihu. Oh, wait a minute. If that's the case, wait, don't we need here Lakim Shem Achiv?
Fundamental reason.
All right, and this person is La Barochi. He's not incapable of doing this. So what's going on here? So the Gemara is posing the question here, which is, okay, there is one Saris that is problematic, which is Lakim Shem Achiv, and he is disqualified. According to Rabbi Kiva, that's a Saris Chama. According to Rabbi Lezer, that's a Saris Adam. What about the fact that this person right now is unable to reproduce? The fact that he has shat the kosher beforehand, why should that have impact over here? Because right now he's unable to be lakim shem achiv. So Rava explains that's because if you don't say that, you're going to run into this problem, which is, because if you don't say that shat the kosher is an enabler, but a person like Kim Shevachid, even though right now or currently he's unable to reproduce, then you're going to run into this problem. Samarava, imkein en lechayishach sheira leibum. Because shana laseh balas sriz chama shachat kodem lemitato. Wait a minute. Maybe then there'll be no woman who's ever able to form yibum because her husband turned into lost his potency on his deathbed, meaning that right before he dies, he's unable to procreate. And it's not because of any human intervention. It's because min hashamayim, he's sick, he's ill, and therefore he's unable to procreate anymore. And if her husband's a sriz chama now, then there's no need for yibum anymore because her husband was unable to reproduce. That's the case. There's no din of kum shem achiv because his achiv couldn't do it. So the Gemara says, "L'Rabbi Eliezer piruko derava pirchahi." This question is only a question according to Rabbi Eliezer's position. So it says, the Gemara says, "L'Rabbi Eliezer piruko derava pirchahi." According to Rabbi Eliezer, the question of Rava is a question. But so, altam ki chushuta dat chilabe. So that it was a weakness that came into him. So therefore, he's not called a saris, but rather it's the death that is weakening his body. It's not that he's rendered, right? He's not rendered impotent because of his coming next to death. He still has potency. He just doesn't have the strength to act on that potency. So he's not really a saris chama. Now again, it'd only be a problem according to Rabbi Eliezer, who argues on a Mishnah that a saris chama is kasher. Amai kamar Rabbi Eliezer, saris adam in chuleitz. So basically it's a question on the sheet of Rabbi Eliezer who ignores this idea of shata kosher. It says it all has to do with the ability to rectify the situation or to give a refuah. Well, the sris chama on his deathbed has no refuah. He's going to die, so we know there's no refuah for it. And number two is he had a shata kosher beforehand, which is that he was able to reproduce beforehand. So the answer to the question is that he had a shata kosher. But Rabbi Eliezer doesn't hold of shata kosher. Rabbi Kiva says shata kosher is relevant. But Rabbi Eliezer doesn't say shata kosher is relevant. And that's why he says that a question is on Rabbi Eliezer's shita, not on Rabbi Kiva's shita. Because Rabbi Eliezer who says shata kosher doesn't matter, Rabbi Kiva just say here, he had a shata kosher, that's why everything's fine. Rabbi Eliezer can't say that, because he doesn't hold of shata kosher, and he holds about refuah. Neither of those are true in this case. The answer of the Gemara is that this is not a problem of a potency, it's a problem of strength. He just doesn't have the strength to act on it, and it's really not a sris chama. And basically, the fundamental machloket in the end between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Eliezer is exactly this. Akim shem achiv. Does that mean that in the future he will be able to be makim shem achiv? Or does that mean that he had to be once ro'ui lakim shem achiv? As long as he was of the status where he could be makim shem achiv, that now makes him ro'ui liyibum. Now, if we know, like by an Eilonit, where she's incapable completely of reproducing from birth until she passes away, then she's clearly excluded from the Parsha of Yibum. Over here, we have a Saris, where, again, the possibility of him being able to reproduce in the future, or he had the possibility of reproducing in the past, is that enough to designate him or delineate him as someone that does reproduce and is Lakim Shem Achiv? And that's Machloket here between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva as to which one is the guiding factor? Is the fact that he was once able to reproduce or the fact that he may be able to reproduce in the future? And that's why Rabbi Kiva leans on Shata Kosher, whereas Rabbi Eliezer leans on Rifu'ah. Okay, Hechidami Sris Chama. What's called a Sris Chama? Am Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Yosef, Am Rabbi Yochanan. Kol Shelo Ra'a Shachat B'Kashrutol. Someone who had a congenital problem. He never had a moment where he was not in this situation. M'naya Dinan. How do we know? I mean, that how do you test this? Because he's not going to be of age or old enough to make this test till much later on. How do you know? So, Rabbi, you call him Matil Ma'im Veino Sekipa. Anybody who urinates and does not create an arc when they urinate, then it's problematic. The assumption being that there's not enough strength then. In order to urinate, that same problem will manifest itself in his reproduction. And therefore, he won't be able to, Gemara says, kol shechazer sheno reh kecheitz, doesn't shoot like an arrow, is not going to be able to impregnate the woman. Mimai haven. What does it come from? What's the cause of this congenital problem? So, afye ime betiara, his mother used to bake bread, betiara, in the afternoon, when it's really hot, v'shatya shichra maka, and she drinks beer, that was, Rashi says, Shecher Mazug is diluted beer. Ve'ika Damrei Chazak, some say it means it's very strong beer. So it comes from being very, very high heat and then drinking beer. So that's what the cause of this is. Amar Rav Yosef, Aynu Dishmano Li Imi Damar, Kol Shememi Imo Lakui, V'loyedana Mai Niu. That's what I heard my mother saying, that anybody who is Lakui already has a problem from birth, but I didn't know what she was talking about. When it says, Licho Shema Hivri Bentayim, why don't we worry about the fact that maybe became healthy in the interim? Kaven did chilato b'sofo lakoi lo chashinan. That since we know from birth he had a problem, we don't know right now that he has a problem, we can assume that in the interim that the problem was static and that nothing changed in between. Meitiv Rabrari Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus Omer, botkim ato shlosh piyamim betoch shmonim yom. We check him 3 times within 80 days. L'chad eiver chashinan l'kule gufa lo chashinan. For one Aver, we do a check, and we worry about the fact that it might have changed its status. But for his entire body, there we don't worry about the fact that it changed his body. Over there, he's talking about the eye, for the eyesight, and talking about his eyes. So over there, when we check the eye, he says you have to check it 3 times in 80 days to make sure that whatever is happening with the eye, it's the movement of Bechor. So when they're checking the Bechor, they have to check to wait, make sure that there's no cataract, or there's no problem. He says check 3 times over 80 days to make sure that it's a permanent mum. So you see here that Rabbi Chanina ben Antigonus worries about the fact that just checking the beginning and the end is not enough. I mean, that maybe something changed in the interim. So you make you check 3 times over a period of 80 days. So Gemara says, that's right. With one Aver, you can worry about the fact that it maybe changes status. But something that affects the entire body of the individual, it's his whole makeup, over there we're not going to assume. If we know that it was true when he's born, it's no, it's true now, we're not going to assume that something happened that he became all of a sudden healthy in between, and therefore we're not going to worry about that. Okay, we're going to stop over here by the 2 dots on the top of Pei Amud Aleph.